We've got the Canadian Highlander Challenge, the Old School Challenge, and the Popper Challenge. You're sleeving up some mono green, right?
Old school? Oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
Are you borrowing Quinn's Chaos Orb? That's a good
Maybe.
question, right? That is a good question.
Maybe not. I mean, it's good, but like,
Oh,
just
dude.
fucking just
Don't
mono green them.
just don't lose the chaos.
Yeah, like that's why I just don't want to. Obviously, if I lose any cards, like I'm in trouble as it is, just losing it for myself. But like, you know, accepting that risk for something else is like, I'll just play an extra scavenger foe.
You bought a house, whatever.
Yeah, you got collateral. I'll just take your house. It's fine.
Yeah, you got enough risk. You can't be risk averse now. Crack foothills for blue. Stifle and daze your spell. Pitch mist hollow too. Force through my food chain. Submerge will tuck. In response to night activation, Murktide is fucked. When I surgical for lethal damage, and you thought you'd stacked your doomsday to play around my hate, then wither bloom command. And that look on your face, it was a beautiful play. Big brain, I feel like it's a beautiful play. I could do this all day.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Threshold, the Legacy podcast that's stuck under Teferi's realm and keeps accidentally saying last episode, and it just keeps fucking phasing out, and then it phases back in. Here we are, episode 79, again. Only we know that, though. It's like we're playing a game with ourselves, too. My name is Quinn Omori. Here, as always, with my co-host, Jeff Kinsey. Jeff, how's it going?
Hey, good. Hello.
Do you ever get that deja vu feeling like we've done this episode already?
We're just stuck in like a Scheherazade loop, and finally one time we'll like win an episode and it'll just all
and then someone like rules lawyers will be like, well, actually the game's not over, you just lost half your life. with Brendan McBain. McBain, what's up?
Hey guys. All of a sudden I got into this like inception mindset where I was like, does time slow down when you go like inside like a Scheherazade game, inside a Scheherazade game? Like, how does it work?
You should get a time extension, right? Just from your opponent casting Scheherazade. Just to really like, judge. Like, I
judge,
need like,
and they're like, minutes. Oh, right away, sir. Here you are. Here's your extra 10 minutes for Scheherazade.
They should keep track of that on the board where, you know, it's like round one and then in brackets, like McBain versus Kinsey, round seven.
Yeah. They like called up a loudspeaker. Attention, everyone. Jeff and McBain have cast as Scheherazade. They will get a 10-minute time extension. Let's all give them a round of applause.
Is Scheherazade banned in Vintage?
It has to be. Otherwise, I would be playing Vintage.
it's banned Legacy, right? It's got to be.
Yeah. I think that falls into like the dexterity cards ruling.
I think I'd fall into...
Yeah, it's banned. It's banned. Google it, and the first result is it's massively unfun. And then the second result is, have you read the fucking card?
But it's also banned in Vintage.
Yeah.
Okay, so we haven't been wasting God accounts.
Oh, can you imagine? Yo, when we played the... It's not a magical line, is it? I was going to say, when we did that Legacy Unchained thing out of the Blue Dojo, can you imagine if we just showed up with the Scheherazade list?
Oh my god.
Well, they only unbanned like certain stuff, right?
Yeah, but can you imagine? Can you imagine? Also, there's no chance in hell Modo would accurately survive a Scheherazade resolving.
Having never thought about casting one, I didn't realize it only cost white.
Oh yeah. It's good.
I think I'm gonna get into competitive EDH. It just make my whole deck Scheherazade loops.
Some of it is like, you know, you look at Divine Intervention and you look at Scheherazade and it's the same card.
Oh, imagine, okay, you build a competitive EDH deck where the whole point is to like loop Shahrazad until you find Divine Intervention and then bore everyone into conceding.
What happens if you draw a subgame? I feel like the text that Shahrazad accounts for this.
Each player who doesn't win.
They were thinking. They knew.
I don't know.
Well, that's the Oracle text.
I don't know what it actually says here. When the subgame is over,
when any loser
shuffle their cards, return to the library, resume the game in progress with the loser of the subgame having their remaining or having his or her remaining life points, rounding down.
Wow.
The subgame has no ante. Using less than 40 cards may be necessary.
Fuck yeah.
Shout out 40?
Shout out to Rob Cross.
That's like real old, yeah.
He had me pick up a Scheherazade for him at like the start of COVID.
Oh my God.
And I offered, like, he's like, hey, can you get one? I asked Jordan, I was like, do you have a Scheherazade? This is the price like my friend is willing to pay. And he's like, yeah, I can do that. So I show up and Jordan like goes through his thing and he only has like one Scheherazade and it's like pretty minty. And he's like, I don't know if I want to give this to you for this price. Cause I was giving him like HP price. And I was like, I don't know. Sorry. I'm just the middleman here. Like, are you going to sell me the Scheherazade or not? So now I've got, I should say Rob has a minty Scheherazade waiting at my place for when
he's the beginning of COVID.
Since the beginning of COVID,
he's been
making babies and toting babies around the country.
Making his sub games.
He was here on my birthday.
Yeah, that would have been a great time for both of us to remember to bring the shares.
It's funny that you say it's like minty, because in my mind, Scheherazade exists in two conditions: unused and ripped in half.
Anyway, it's a beautiful fucking card. And we'll just leave it there. It's, all right, well, that was a good divergence. Are we out of the sub game?
Okay. We can be out of the sub game. I think all of our listeners have lost half of their life points.
Round it down.
Gentlemen, we have what is the most important housekeeping event short of the Canadian Threshold Invitational. Long time coming. As of right now, we can still go, which is good. I know last year that was an issue. Puget Sound Battleground. You've heard me say this many times. Number 4, July 30th and 31st in Tacoma, Washington. Very excited. It's actually happening. The border is open as of right now. Hotels are booked. Entry is paid. Decks are maybe chosen.
We'll get to that.
But it's happening. If you haven't registered and you've been thinking about it, please go and register online. It'll help, you know, get everything smooth going into it. We have a whole range of events going on. July 30th, the first day, there's a modern headliner at 9 o'clock in the morning. There's a legacy headliner at noon. So you can go and lose the first two rounds of modern and then jump straight into legacy. There's an old school event, challenge, not a headliner. This is, you know, below. This is the opening band at noon. And there's a pioneer challenge, back to challenge at 3 p.m. That's a regional championship qualifier also. Nobody fucking understands what the organized play layout is right now, but that'll appeal to somebody, I'm sure.
I thought you said it's a reasonable championship qualifier. I was like, yeah, it does sound pretty reasonable, I guess. Like, you know, it starts 3 hours after the legacy event, so maybe I can go play in my first games of Pioneer ever at that point.
You could do the whole range. You could go O2 Modern, O2 Legacy, and then XO Pioneer all in one day.
OX Pioneer. Never win a match. That sounds great.
Day 2, they have the Team Trios event, which we are currently not playing, I think, in favor of one of the other events, but non-unified, boo, Legacy Modern Pioneer starting at 10, Canadian Highlander Challenge starting at noon, Old School Challenge starting at noon, and a Pauper Challenge starting at 2. Very cool. There's a lot of stuff that I want to do. I'm not going to get to play all the formats that I want. I'd love to like dip my toes back into Pauper, but I am so far out of date on what decks and the format looks like. They also have side events like on demand. There's, you know, regular draft. They have it listed here as like a standard set. I really hope they have some double masters going because I will need to do that after maybe a 1-3 result in Legacy. I need to, you know, cool off by spending way too much money on some cards. They also have a entire booster box sealed, which is listed as also standard, because for double masters that would be insane, but that would capture the Eternal Weekend spirit of the high rolling set. I will never forgive you, McBain, for talking me out of the $100 entry prestige draft or whatever the hell it was at Eternal Weekend the first time we went, because that looked sick as hell.
Did I talk you out of it?
You did. I think you looked me in the eyes and you were like, it's $100 American.
I don't know. We must have been doing something else. I don't know. That seems kind of lame. The artist, I'm just re-reviewing the artist list, and it's like, you know, Richard Kane Ferguson isn't there, but pretty much all the other awesome artists are there.
It's a great batch of artists for like the kind of era of Magic they're catering to.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, as much as I'd love to have who's the fucking trucker? as much as I'd love to have like a trucker drawn on my Magic card, like I'll take Drew Tucker instead.
I believe there's a mask mandate, so I don't think you would attend anyways.
Can you draw a mask on my card, please, sir?
Hey, Seb, can you write fuck Trudeau on this for me?
Yeah. All right, now we're venturing into the land of politics here. And I kind of like it. So, Jeff, I guess the real question is, you are going to get your fourth crack assigned, correct?
I am. And after many discussions of something that I feel kind of weird about, so my Caracas are signed and dated. They have the year that Nicola signed them on. And then I had to buy a fourth one because of Yorion. So, you know, it's been like, does it feel strange to be like, can you please backdate this? But I think it's what I'm going to go for, man. I got to get my percentages right. I can't have people eyeing up that 22 on the bottom and knowing that I have like two other Caracases in my hand.
I think no one will actually look that close. They'll just see that it's signed and they'll kind of look past it. But I do like the idea of it being 2022 because it kind of captures the essence that is Fire Magic that has happened since then. And it captures COVID, it captures Fire, all that stuff. You get Yorion in there. Maybe she can write, like, you can reveal Caracas before the game to have it started in your hand.
It is like a reminder for when, like, Companion is eventually completely removed from Magic. You're like, hey, Grandpa, why do you have this fourth Caracas?
It made me think of this old... I was going to say there's this old school cube that someone has called the Richard Garfield cube.
Ooh. And
apparently, like, so it's double signed. Every card is signed by Richard Garfield in the cube. But also, he had this thing where when he would sign cards, he would often, like, censor out certain words on the card to make the card more powerful.
Oh, like, get him to, like, errata them in real time?
Yeah, when he would sign it, he would errata the card. And the rule of the cube, to my understanding anyway, is that you play as though it's errated. Like, whatever it is what it is.
That's sick.
It's a pretty unique one-of-a-kind cube, but there's someone who's got like a bunch of scans of it online. But Richard will not be at Puget Sound Battleground 4, unfortunately.
He might be peeking in the windows.
You could get your... Yeah, he might be. He might be close. You can get your Tarpan signed by Margaret, which is high value. Get all your dual lands signed. At least a bunch of them anyway.
I got a stack ready to go.
Yeah, so you're... So for... Day one, you're obviously playing modern, right?
Oh yeah, big time. Big time modern guy.
Okay. To be fair, I was half tempted to just play old school both days.
Both day old school is crazy. That's a choice, absolutely.
Yeah.
I feel like you know, obviously all of us aren't like so jazzed about like Legacy right now. But kind of like when it went down to Mox for an event, it's just like having a substantial event, like just the hype of being an event like that, like overrides everything else. And also just the ability to play at something like that. Like I want to turn out for as like a community moment.
I 100% agree on that. When we went down to Seattle last time, I definitely had that kind of like, we were in the horse latitudes or the doldrums, as we talked about, and going down and just both playing, but having those kind of like intermatch just chats with people and catching up was really fun. And like, it was one of those things where you have to kind of be part of it. If you're just kind of like, you know, drafting some cube on the side and stuff, it's not the same. So yeah, as much as I want to just play a bunch of old school, cause it's so rare to get that chance. I am going to be playing the Legacy.
I always think too, like to that end, it's like sometimes there's stuff that like I don't think I like. Food is like a good example. Like there's some kind of food I think I don't like. I like to try to go and find the best prepared, the unarguable best example of it. Because then if I don't like that, I can, you know, rest at peace, right? Like I've had the best there is to offer and now my opinion can stand. So if I'm just sitting here playing a league of Legacy a week, you know, and just losing as Delver back to back to back, or like losing to Colin the weekly every week, you know, it's maybe not the best example. So maybe I'm getting the wrong picture of Legacy, and seeing a big event full force will let me form a correct opinion.
It sounds way overthought. And it's also like, you're kind of like, and therefore, if I don't have fun, I'm quitting Magic forever.
Yeah, ipso facto, I'm retiring from the podcast.
On day two, I think, Jeff, you and I are both like pretty locked into the old school.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be fun if we can get like one or two other people who are going down with us to play some old school. I think Dylan could be convinced.
Absolutely, Dylan can be convinced.
Yeah. So why don't we jump into like what we're actually going to play?
You're locked in. Hey, you've got like no wavering. You've got a plan. Or is your wavering like you have like three cards you're trying to change?
No, I'm not trying to overthink it. Like I am trying, like my deck selection right now is me like thumbing through, like it's like you're picking a book off the shelf and you're like thumbing through the books, you're like, oh, where is it? And you're looking at the little like library number, the decimal, and you're like, oh, it's not that one. It's not that. Here it is. This is the one. And like whatever the sideboard is and whatever the sideboard plan is and like all that, I'm like, that's the one. No questions asked. I'm not going to try to big brain this. I'm just going to play something that's good, that's been tested and thought out. And then I'm going to practice with it a bunch and just like get a feel for it. I'm not going to try to go into the spice kitchen and start importing things from faraway lands to spice up the lands deck. It's like, no, we're going to go nice, simple meat and potatoes lands, your father's lands deck, and Just go with that.
This isn't like Alleylands bracket one, bracket one, bracket one.
No, it is an Alleylands list. I will say that. I have been chatting with him online. He's got this just helpful guide that he I find it really helpful in terms of like, it's more than a sideboard guide. And it's kind of broken down in the, I don't know, the top like 12 decks, let's say. And then at the top of each deck, it will say in like rank order, the different like approaches you should be having to the matchup. So it'd be like this matchup, you want to be a prison deck first, a combo deck second, and an aggro deck third. So it's like attacking with Urza Saga tokens is like lowest on the priority list. Wasteland locking them is highest on the priority list. The list, and it's really just helpful as like a shortcut to be like, where does my head need to be? And then he'll provide usually two or three bullet points on how we win the game and how we lose the game. And sometimes it's like how we win is like fast merit lage, cross their fingers, they don't have brazen borrower. Like that's how we win the game. Or it's like we win the game through like endurance beatdown and Elvish Reclaimers. And you just go, oh, okay. Like at least that's an end state that I know I'm trying to aim for.
It's like the elevator pitch for each matchup.
Exactly. And then it also has like how you lose the game. And some of them are just like God draw. Like that's how you lose the game. But there's a couple others where it's just like, oh, this lines up against this. And then it's really bad for you. And it takes an entire like, what I imagine of like days and weeks of testing and just distills it down into like a cue card. That's just like, here's the matchup and here's what you're boarding in and out. Here's what you have to think about. Go. So that's when I'm kind of taking off the bookshelf and I'm going to be playing. It's a pretty stock red, green lands list. Unfortunately it is playing Urza Saga. It's pretty close to what I played in Puget Sound, but Seattle last time.
The geographical Puget Sound.
The geographical Puget Sound, yeah. Exactly. So it is playing Elvish Reclaimers and a few other little things, but for the most part, it's a pretty stock red-green lands list right now. I will say the two... Or the main other consideration I have was D&T. I do really like seeing some of the D&T lists, but I just don't feel confident enough in my D&T prowess. And I haven't, XJ hasn't made a nice little primer like Ali has in terms of here's the cookbook recipe of how to beat each matchup yet. So it's not quite shortcut enough for me.
True. That's where I'm going to fall down. Plus, I mean, the strength of you not playing D&T is that you would insist on playing some non-Yorion monstrosity, which is a critical error. So
I would play a Yorion deck without sagas. I know that's where I would land. I think it's the right choice. And I don't like the saga bullshit in D&T. It kind of feels dumb. So,
yep.
Hopefully that's where you're landing. Is that where you're landing?
Part of me really wants to just play Esper Vial because, you know, as with everything else, that's like the recent experience that I have for the last like year. But looking at it as like a, you know, okay, let's get serious. It's a bigger event. I think the line is to just play D&T. You know, the ability to just instinctively know things about like, you know, where your position is or like what you're thinking of, or like very easily think of like what your outs are. Esperar, you're like, I don't even know what the fuck I'm playing this week. Like, you know, there's 80 single cards and who knows what one comes up.
But to Torak. So fucking sick.
I mean, Torak is sick and I would love to just do that all week. So, I mean, I'll bring the cards with me. I'll audible. I've got a line on another Drake that's not Giuseppe. So it would possibly put me up to four. which is insanity. Holy
fuck.
But like 90% sure I'm just going to, you know, stroll on over to JR's Twitter account and grab the latest red, white DNT list, which I did do 2 weeks ago for the weekly. And at that point, I hadn't played DNT in like a couple months and I just got a 4-0. Like, I got extremely lucky in some cases, but, you know, being able to just have those shortcuts and lines in your head is great. I'm not
even
like
for the, even for the time issues. Like, I know when you and Jack were playing at the last Seattle event, time is a very real thing. Like, it's always a real thing for me. Don't get me wrong. But for the Esperval deck, when you just like literally don't really have a good way to close the game out and everything is pushing a rope up a hill, like, it's pretty brutal. So
yeah, you need like a high APM.
Yeah. Very high.
I feel like the StarCraft like keyboard cam, you know, I'm stacking all my triggers. Like,
yeah. And then like the smooth brain just me make Cultra go boom boom.
See, perfect. That's what I need. That's what I need to do.
Sometimes that's all you need. Like, yeah. That's my me make Mertledge go bang bang. Like, that's a thing. What's sad nowadays is when you have Tabernacle and a Mertledge in play, everyone knows it's a destroy and it doesn't get destroyed because it's indestructible.
But oh, like, you're not years like, ago, impressing anybody with it.
Years ago, when you would just like draw your card and they'd be like, oh, sir, you need to, and you're like, and you kind of get to like, you know, rules lawyer them. That doesn't happen anymore.
Now, unfortunately, the ruling in general, maybe it's just the way they enforce it. It is looser on that anyways, right? Forget about Merrily's being indestructible, but it used to be the classic. You draw your cards. Oh, oops, my whole board is gone.
All my apes are gone. Yeah, exactly.
That's changed now, right? Like,
yeah,
it's so like you would, functionally nothing's changed. You should remind them.
Yeah, yeah. And there's like, I think you can get into GRV territory. But like, really, your opponent should like pause. It's their trigger to remember. Their creatures have it, yada yada. But like, you can't just sit there. You have to like, yeah.
I remember playing a game at Mox in I was getting mixed up. Ballard, that's the one in the city, right?
Yeah,
yeah. And I was playing his lands, and this is like forever ago. I'm playing D&T, and it's like game three. And, you know, I had three or four creatures out and they played a Tabernacle and we've been going back and forth. And then there's a turn I just like drew and, you know, they're immediately like, judge. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Like, I know what happens. Like, I fucked up. All of these die. And they're just sitting there looking so smug. And then I was just like, cataclysm. So, I mean, that memory also makes me think maybe I should stray a little bit from JR's Twitter feed and onto a different part of his Twitter feed. Isolated System just did really well in an event with Yorion D&T, which he's usually not been a proponent of, but playing Cataclysm in the side, which I fucking love Cataclysm. So it's very tempting. Also of note, it's mono white. He's not playing Magus, so you're dropping like all of the blasts and like the Hammer Mage that JR has.
Okay, in like the week before when you got your 4-0, I played a 60 card red white D&T. Oh, it was a total metagamed pile of garbage. I had one main deck red blast, which I got a Yorion on one game.
Was game it the mirror?
No, it was like just like the four color bullshit deck.
Yeah. So it was Elliot.
And it was someone else, but they just like cast a Yorion and us like red blast. And they kind of paused and like, I beg your pardon. But it was just been like rotting in my hand forever.
They probably thought you were that guy in Old School with his fucking extra circle of protections. Like, there's no way that's in my opponent's deck.
And I had two Cataclysms in the sideboard and I got cast it against Scott and it was just like, it was so beautiful.
It's so good.
Yeah. It's so good. I did see that Isolated Systems list, the 80 card Saga list, and it had like two Flagstones in the deck and then two Cataclysms in the side. That did look pretty sick. And Seattle is generally a little bit more controlly and bullshitty. So I think that's your default choice.
Yeah.
And you can go from there.
Because like Magus is good, but there are a lot of ways to kill it now that exist around. I mean, it's always been not that hard to kill, but you know, it never feels quite like the hard lock it once was, but it is a really good utility thing. And then obviously having all the blasts and the hammer mage out of the side for like eight casts or something is nice.
That does sound actually really good.
But I think on the other side, you play like maybe some Serenities or something. I know Isolated System had a Kataki on the side and just go from there. Because the mono white also plays, I always get this mixed up. This isn't my Field of Dreams, but it's a Field of Ruin. I think it played two. I could be hallucinating, but I love that card also.
Yeah, it played two Field Ruins. It played two, was it Agonjo?
Yep.
Two Agonjo, two Field Ruin, and then
Wastelands Ports.
Yeah, the four of everything else, and then a whole bunch of like 16 or 17 planes.
Yep. Because like Field of Ruin is sick. I don't know if you played it that much playing D&T, but like it's always like so much better than you think it's gonna be. And you like keep these hands where like you're really light on white mana, and you're just like, oh well, it's fixing me. Perfect.
So when the deck first came out with Field of Ruin, I was like, oh, I guess I'm just gonna, you know, pick the book off the bookshelf and net deck this fucker and see where we can go from here. And I was playing it as a, well, I didn't have any other better options, so I guess I'll play this. So I just assumed it was like a Tectonic Edge kind of thing. And that's how I was playing it. And it was like, oh no, you get a land. Like, it fixes you as well. And I was like, oh my God, this is incredible.
It's so satisfying. It reminded me of
when I first actually learned that Crows and Verge fetched two lands, not just one. And my brain just exploded.
You're just failing to find for years.
Yeah. Story of my life.
Yeah.
So I think you're probably 80-20 locked into D&T.
Yeah.
And then from there, you're probably like 70-30 on just normal white. And then maybe like 30% you're on red.
It really is a hedge on like, because I think Cataclysm in a traditionally like control meta is extremely strong. Like if you show up and people just want to like jam a bunch of planeswalkers and you can shove a Cataclysm down their throat, you know, that's exactly what you want to be doing. But obviously, you know, stacking up blasts isn't the worst in that case either.
It's true, but it's not Cataclysm.
It's true. Like, you know, the fun gained on a blast is negligible. But like if I go 1-3 and I'm playing five blasts, like I'm upset. Not because I'm playing blasts, just because I went 1-3. But if I went 1-3, but I got to resolve Cataclysm twice, like, oh man, I'm, you know, entering that Pioneer fucking event happy.
Yeah. Like Cataclysm, like you could accidentally have someone like hit the table and all your cards fall everywhere. And you're like, oh, don't worry, just pick one of each. And we can continue. Because you're fucking dead. Like, okay. Well, this sounds pretty awesome. For old school, tell me about where you're at for old school.
Old school is an easy choice for me because I only have the cards to play one deck in old school.
You're playing D&T in old school, right?
I am playing a bunch of shitty creatures that probably shouldn't exist in a constructed format.
I remember when we were first like exploring old school, I was like, Jeff, this is the D&D of old school. It's just like shitty cards that somehow create enough weird interactions that it's actually good.
Oh, yeah. So it's my own little direction on, you know, the infinitely customizable mono green stompy, I suppose. I'm eschewing the, you know, aggro life of playing like 18 one drops and instead playing all timers like Spitting Slug and if Ifrit, because you know, I didn't buy some Ifrits during the pandemic to not play them at a sanctioned old school event.
And and just for the listeners and also old school players that don't know what Ifrit is.
Oh, let me memory this. He's a good boy. He's a good man. He costs 2 green. He has the Serendib art, or rather it's his art. It's a 3/3 flyer, Djinn, and you can pay a single green. Sorry, anybody can pay a single green to Hurricane for 1.
So you can just hold priority and just
stack them up.
Nug everyone for like 8 damage.
When we did the webcam events, that's usually where it would kind of go, is like you have it out and you know, you're trying to chunk in the air, or maybe you can't. And then every turn you're just like sulfuric vortexing, like just, you know, do it for two. And then, okay, do it for 6. Just burn them out.
And the fact that you can like do it for 2, swing for 3, do it for 2, swing for 3, like it is a clock and a half.
Mm-hmm. You just have to hope they don't also have green.
Yeah, they've got their like, oh, I'll play my... Well, I guess the only thing they could have is like an emerald if they weren't on green.
Mm-hmm.
I guess everyone plays duels in old school, but still.
Yep. But yeah, I mean, getting to activate like White Lily Wolf or getting in there with Whirling Dervish or using Scavenger Folk to just like eat shit up, it's a good time. So I'm going to steal, I think, 3 cards from Quinn, if he's okay with that, which would be 2 Berserks and the CE Orb.
Yeah, you want beta ones?
Please, no. and then just go powerless.
I think you want to go up to 3 Pendlehavens.
Yeah, that's the tech.
Pendlehaven is so fucking good.
Pendlehaven on Whirling Dervish is very nice.
Pendlehaven's good until you draw the second one. Oh, do you want 3?
It's
people who are in the know will strip mine your Pendlehaven.
See, I was just gonna say it's like playing 60-card D&T. You play 3 Caracas because it's good. It's legendary, but it's also prone to dying.
Yeah, people will go for your Pendlehavens.
You also have the card Aether Vial.
Yeah. Whatever.
I guess you
try to resolve a 4-mana 3/3 flyer.
I guess you're also not playing a bunch of 1/1s.
That's true. I think that lands the word 2 because I really the like, you know, Scrib Sprites, Timber Wolves, you know, all that stuff doesn't really appeal to me too much.
A 1/1 banding? Come on, man.
It's like I told you before we're recording. I don't want to have to look up banding well enough to explain to other people what banding does or doesn't do.
I don't know. Most people in old school like have a pretty good grasp.
Like that's banding, I guess. That's fair, but like, ugh, it's going to be a problem that I don't want to get into.
I would note that the Argothian Pixies that's currently not in your deck is a pretty powerful card. It's kind of like the Whirling Dervish. But the fact that you can also tracker and just like fight artifacts is pretty sick.
What are you talking about? Tracker fight?
Oh, no, artifacts.
Tracker fights itself.
Damn it.
Yeah. But yeah, this is like, I mean, like D&T, I have my mono green deck and then I have a whole bunch of shitty cards on the side that could go in it. I got Elvish Archers, Argothian Pixies, Tracker, more Spitting Slugs. You know, just every kind of shitty green card you can think of, I have in a pile.
Yeah.
Apparently, I need to pick up some Alio piles because those are in all of these lists.
I have 1 or 2. I can lend them to you.
All right.
But the Whirling Dervish tech against the Abyss is pretty sick.
Was this the pro black can't be chosen?
Well, it's a destroy. Yeah, you can't target it. So it's just pro black and get wrecked, nerd.
Yep. That's like the best feeling. I mean, it has to be the worst feeling for the other side of the table, but like when you just plop down like a pro black thing and your opponent's like, my entire deck is black and it's like not game 2 or anything. Oh, man.
Yeah. I guess just transitioning, it's a good transition to the deck I was going to play. which is like a pseudo, it's not quite the Honda Civic Delver of old school. But there's a deck that's kind of affectionately known as Lion Dip Bolt.
Okay, that is the one that you put in the document here.
Mine is a different version of it, with a bit of history behind it. But like the main, the net deck version of it is playing generally 4 or 12 bolt effects. So you're playing 4 Lightning Bolt, 4 Chain Lightnings, and 4 Psionic Blast, or blue Chars for the Zoomers out there. And your threat suite is generally just 4 Lions and 4 Serendibs. And then you've got some Mistress Factories. And sometimes you're playing like 1 Sarah Angel.
Mm-hmm.
But this version is playing no Serendip Jins. And you're playing the 4 Savannah Lions, which is like the Delver of old school. And then you're playing 2 Order of Leaper, which is that pro black creature that we were just talking about. And it's the old Fallen Empires pump knight where you can give it first strike or make it bigger, which is a very real thing that happens quite often when you're playing with it. And then the 2 rock stars that are in the deck is 1 Sarah Angel, which I have demonic tutored up multiple times just because it's so good in certain situations. And then the other one is Darylore.
Darylore.
Which is just a 3 and a black for a 4/4 that makes all your other black spells cost 1 more black. Oh, which basically makes your other black spells unplayable because they're so, you're just splashing black.
Yeah, double black. It's like you have to crack your Lotus.
But just the fact that it's like non-blue and 4 toughness and 4 power is like a very real thing.
Unboltable and like, yeah.
Yeah, you can't tear it, you can't bolt it, you can't blast it. There's just like, there's so many things that just don't line up well against it. And yeah, and then you're just playing a bunch of duels, restricted cards, and disenchants.
Are you just going to have like $25,000 worth of Magic cards with you?
Apparently.
But this old school deck got to be what, like 15 grand, and then you're playing lands?
That's kind of scary, actually. Maybe I'll just play D&T for that reason.
You can get one of those like safes that just like straps onto your body, or you can have like, you know, a briefcase handcuffed to your wrist.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't know if you, that, it's one thing to come back with no Magic cards, another thing to come back with no hand.
But I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun.
Yeah, that deck looks sick.
But yeah, you raise a good point, Quinn. This is a fucking expensive
ass deck. Just like looking at this and I'm like, oh, that's a lot of dual lands. Oh, and power. Okay.
Wheel. See, that's a really good argument for playing Legacy the first day and Old School the second day.
It also might be a good argument for us playing both shitty green Grizzly Bear decks.
That's true. We did squad up previously.
Yeah. I'm kind of interested in that, actually. How many Berserks do you have, Quinn?
Quinn, supplement 4. Us.
I have 4 Berserks.
Look at that.
Like, oh, right, like original middle. Art?
I have 2 beta ones and 2 unlimited ones.
Hmm. Huh. That could be fun.
And if he loses my beta ones, he just gave me a piece of power.
Ooh, yeah, that's a trade.
That's how much they're worth now.
Jesus.
Yeah, that could be fun. But regardless, I'm still excited. If yeah. I'm playing a shitty green deck or mono red deck or something, I do really enjoy playing mono red, even in old school.
Yeah, where's the Yidwins?
Yeah, exactly. With the fucking Yidwinner Freeds. It's yeah, so good. The
Balloon Brigade. Like when I think of like McBain in old school, like that's what I think of.
It is really fun. And I did play it at, there was a Quebec City, or was it Montreal? Yeah, it was Montreal Thunderwolves. They held like an online webcam event and I played the Yidwinner Freeds mono red and got top 4 with it. Pretty fun.
You can do it. I love too. That's a little Easter egg for the geography nerds, because if you say there's a Quebec City, Montreal.
Quebec City, Montreal, Quebec. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's all accurate. Real ones know.
And I guess to just round it out, Quinn, you're not planning on attending at this point.
No, I keep looking while you guys were talking, I was also looking through deck lists, like maybe I'll change my mind. And I was like, I don't want to play any of these fucking decks. I went on vacation for the first time since like 2019. And you'd like, historically, when I've come back from vacation, the number one thing I want to do is play Magic. And I just like don't care to. We are playing Limited on Sunday. My love of gambling, I think, may be undercutting that. Because they're playing double Masters draft. But yeah, I don't know, man. Like, it's one of those things too where I'm sure now that I haven't done it in a long time, but you think of like the worst case scenarios, but I just like think of someone like resolving like a Teferi on me, and I'm like, I just don't want to play that game. Like, if it happens on a Thursday, I just like, oh, we can like scoop, it's all good. And I'm like not mad at the person, obviously. I just like don't care to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I can't really like enter like a 9-round tournament and be like, yeah, it's just like, I don't know, I'm gonna get beer or something.
Right, like real stakes and then just back out. Yeah.
If it was in Portland, then I would go, and then it'd be like, as soon as someone played like a Teferi or like a Narset or some shit, I'd be like, yeah, cool, I can drop now. See you later. Like, it's game one. Yeah, it's all good, man. It's all good. Let me sign the sheet for you. Thank you. Good luck.
Yeah, I don't realize that this is my antagonist, and yeah. I need to leave.
I did it. I lasted one game of round one before I saw a card that I hate.
I'll have to keep a mental note of, if I was you, when would I drop? If I can report back.
Main deck, Red Blast. I don't know what else. Fucking Allosaurus Shepherd.
Yep.
Well, the cards where it's like, don't play the game of Magic that you love. I'm like, okay, I won't.
Yeah, see, Shahrazad's on the other side. Play That's the game of Magic you love twice.
More Magic. Shahrazad, unban Shahrazad, you fucking cowards. You can't tell me that's more miserable than any of the cards we just mentioned.
So what you're saying, Quinn, is you're going to ask Rob if you can borrow Shahrazad, and then you're going to make like a white prison,
one copy of Shahrazad.
A white prison, like a white black prison deck in old school.
And blue white stasis Shahrazad control.
Yes. Now we're talking. What's your win con?
Boring everyone to death.
You know, yeah, McBain, but you're playing a white deck with burn spells in old school. You could play that Shahrazad.
This is true. Like
it does 10 damage.
Yep.
That's an incredible rate for 2 mana.
It's extremely funny if you get somebody down to like 5 and you cast it, and then you play this whole game and the outcome is like 2/3 of a lightning bolt.
Yeah, it's a bad card to draw late for sure.
Maybe that's why you only need one.
Yeah, it's perfect.
I'm probably better off just playing like, you know, the 4th Psionic Blast, because it can actually kill like a Seraing Angel or something if I need to, but
yeah, Shahrazad removes it from the game
temporarily. Well, we will miss you, Quinn.
Yeah, it's not gonna be the same.
Much appreciated.
Doing like a big Magic trip, you know, all the boys in a yeah. house without Quinn.
Like, even if you were just, you know, jamming some Pioneer or something and playing some old school on Sunday and playing Cube with us and drafting and playing some Forgetful Fish, I think it'd be a great time.
I also don't want to catch COVID-19. No offense. I love you guys, but I see you here. If it was like you lived in Tacoma, Washington, then I'd be like, well, I need to go to Tacoma, Washington. If it was like, no offense to Tacoma, I'm sure it's gotten a lot nicer since the last time I went there. And it was like pleasant. You know, I'm sure it's a nice place. Seems like a nice place to live. No, like it's just like a normal city, you know? So like, no offense to people who live in Tacoma, but I'm like not like clamoring to visit, you know, either.
Boo, we're going to get boycott. Our entry to Puget Sound is going to get canceled.
Like if I'm going to get a second bout of the novel coronavirus, it would be at like Portland, Las Vegas, New York, Chicago, you know? On that note, is this a positive? Is this an end on a positive note? The novel coronavirus is no longer novel because more than 50% of people in the United States have caught it.
I was just going to ask when you said that. I was like, is it just like,
it's no, not, it's no is longer
it kind of novel in another sense then?
But no longer novel in the medical sense.
Novel.
Now it's novel in like the personal experience sense.
Yeah, I mean, novel is an interesting way to put that experience. McBain, you have not experienced this, right?
I have not experienced it. It is novel to me. You're correct.
Hold up that one way for God's willing. All right, sorry, actually the wrong podcast. Hold up one green for avoid fate.
There we go. Yeah, I somehow just rolled the dice enough times.
Lucky for you.
I think it's because I roll even or odd to decide who gets to name high roll, like when we're starting to just start the game.
Oh,
I think that's the strategy.
That's a good plan.
Yeah.
But, rock paper scissors to see who chooses even or odd, to see who chooses rolls high roll.
Oh, it's a tie. We have to do it all again.
And then the winner gets a 2-meter head start on the race around the venue.
Jeff, do you want to round us out with maybe collective That's Gas?
Oh, all in one. It's unfair for this to be all in one because this was all me. yeah, let me hit it.
There's a bit of resentment in there, Jeff. I don't know. Like...
No, I got to shout out, Joe Dyer for doing good work as always on This Week in Legacy. I mean, look at us. We do a legacy podcast every other week and release it every other month. So this man's out here doing this, every week and generating content. And, bless his heart, every once in a while, he asks some people for their opinions. And I'd love to say he asks us, but really I get in those DMs, I ask. So we were able to contribute on the, again, we, I just want to include everybody.
You're the manager now. You got to use the we talk. Come on.
I don't think my opinions right now and legacy are appropriate for like public consumption. So
I think that's right. That's why I had to fall on the sword. I was able to contribute to this edition of the Legacy Roundtable and chuck some opinions in there. Nothing, foreign to, I think, anybody familiar with the format, and really, I think, echoing what, all of us would say if we did. But, big shout out as always to Joe for keeping that stuff together.
Yeah, it's also been great to see quite a bit of like just discussion in the Magic community that is underpinned by the data that's collected through the work that he does and the people that help. So again, I think just another shout out to say, if you have a couple bucks, send it their way. It really helps the community. So yeah.
McBain, what do you have? What's on deck?
That's gas. I just want to co-sign. You were trying to take all the credit when you sent it, and I made some comments, and then you.
Hang on, I got to scroll up and see what comments you made.
Did you make the dog comment?
I did. Okay, I did.
Yeah.
Let me read to the listener the extent of your contributions.
Okay, so
there I say 4 hours after I posted it for review. I like it. simple and clean. Also note that we are a dog cast, not kittens. Period.
Yeah, there you go. Jeff, it's shown that if you say you like something and you're supportive of it, but then you provide some critique of like, oh, just add this little, like, you know, cherry on top and stuff, to kind of take away from the person's contribution and make it feel like more like your own, that it's less empowering for the person. So maybe I shouldn't even have added the dog comment and just told you that I liked it in general and that your work in this corporation is appreciated.
Oh, thank you for stepping in as my magic father.
Magic manager, I don't know. Anything from you, Quinn, before we sign off?
Are we doing a unanimous one? I thought I was going to go.
It's flow. Unanimous, baby. We've done it.
I like the kind of unanimous. It's nice and clean.
Yeah. And then we will unanimously thank you if you made it this far. We'll see you all in 2, 3, 4, however many thresholds we feel like.
No, this one's good. This one should be here. This is on a silver platter, right? We're recording like the day after we get back.
And then people hear this.
Yeah.
Oh, and then we're recording. I see.
Yeah. Okay. So like there's no sweat. The only sweat over this is about who can sing an Alanis Morissette cover the best.
Oh, you know, actually, you know who we should shout out again?
Yes.
Jeremy Edwards, who keeps sending us song ideas after hearing that was like the bottleneck. Unfortunately, Jeremy, as I've explained to you via email, the bottleneck has become also other everything else too. But we very much appreciate that you care that everyone cares enough to listen, but that you specifically care enough to send us song ideas so that we can keep the content going. And keep the songs going, which apparently is important to everyone. So thanks a lot.
It's like, you know, when you go to like the Japanese market and you buy one of those sodas where there's like two bottlenecks.
Oh, like with the little like marble in it?
Yeah. Like the song idea only gets you to the marble and then you get to just life after that.
There's everything else. All right. Yeah. See you all. Sometime.